Hello and welcome to the Money Nerds Podcast, where owning a calculator, budgeting your money, and having a net worth is actually cool. I'm your host, Whitney Hansen, and each week I'll be chatting with inspiring people to learn their secrets to financial success. Now let's dive into the show. Hey guys, welcome back to episode 5. We are making strides. So I hear it takes about 6 to 7 episodes before you find your stride in podcasting. And I'm proud to say we're getting there. We're getting really close. So that is super exciting. This week has been exhausting. So I got the opportunity to speak at another conference, which was really cool. And I finalized a date for me to appear on my local TV station. So Mom, I hope you're listening there. But despite the exhaustion, I am even more fired up than ever. I've been listening to you guys and I've been learning about where you're struggling in your financial life. And almost every person I've chatted with has mentioned that an area of struggle is budgeting. And not just creating a budget, but sticking to a budget. So by this time next week, I should have a webinar all about budgeting for you to check out. So I'll be sure to link that in the show notes for next week's episodes. And let's talk about some of the money wins that you guys have been getting. Don't forget, you can share your money wins with me by using hashtag money wins and tagging me in Twitter or on Instagram, or even in the private Facebook group, Manage Your Money Like a Boss, which I would love to see you in there as well. So today's money win comes from Instagram, and it's from @theinstaguy.co. And here is his money win. He says, I saved $400 by staying with a friend instead of paying for a hotel at a conference this weekend. Hashtag money win. I love that because conferences are such a good way to go. It's so great to get that personal and professional development. However, it can be really, really expensive and it can actually kill your budget. So you have to find ways to get creative. So I really admire the way that he took of staying with a friend instead of paying for the hotel. That is such a smart way to go. And $400 of savings that's quite a bit of money. I mean, think of all the coffee you can buy. That's pretty cool. So congratulations on your money win. I'm super impressed and way to go. Very inspirational. Okay, guys, today's guest is a podcaster, father, and early retiree. He was a self-proclaimed money moron at age 22 and is now a self-made millionaire just 13 years later. Since this episode was recorded, he has relaunched his podcast and is absolutely crushing it. And he shares 3 episodes a week. It's so impressive. As a podcaster myself, that's extremely inspirational. In this episode, we talk about selling the car, taking a loss, and driving a beater. So how did that process go down? How not having a car payment was the single greatest thing he did for his financial life. We chat about downsizing from 2,200 square foot home to a 1,000 square foot home with squirrels in the attic. No joke. And then he also shares how he put 50% down on a house and paid off the entire mortgage just 6 months later. And we even go into details on how to set goals. So incredible episode, but I do have to say we had a bit of audio issues in this episode, but the content was so damn good I had to share it anyways because it's so amazing to hear this guy's story. So ladies and gentlemen, I am honored to introduce you to Scott Allen Turner, the host of the Financial Rockstar podcast and content creator at scottallenturner.com. So much for joining. Today I am joined by Scott Allen Turner, and Scott has an amazing story that you guys are going to really love. I'm sure of it. So Scott, give us a little introduction about you, what you do, and all that fun stuff.
Sure. My name is Scott Allen Turner. I've been married for 10 years. I have twin 2-year-olds. They're actually 2-year-old next week, so they keep us a little bit busy. I've had a couple. I call myself a money moron when I got out of college. Had no real financial education, didn't know anything about compound interest. A story back in college, one of my professors came to me one day and he said, you know, you should save 10% of what you earn. And I literally laughed at him. I said, why would I do that? You know, when I'm 40, I can just save 20%.
So, yep.
the kind of smart math you have in college. So I didn't know anything about compound interest. Got out of college, did the super intelligent thing of buying a new car. With not a lot of money, yep. Getting out a car loan that I didn't have any idea how to do that. had a student loan debt, got into credit card debts, and really just that was that way for several years before I started getting educated on money. And probably 25, 26 had a turning point in my life where I started, oh, this is how money's supposed to work. Huh. It made changes in my life then.
So talk to me about that turning point. What was it that made you realize that life could be different and you had to start figuring this stuff out?
The first time was when I got my first college loan bill.
Oh.
That 9 month period afterwards, all right, I got the first loan coming in. I pay it, no big deal. You know, I've got that in my bank account. And then the second one comes in and I look at it and I see, wait a minute, I sent in $100 and $2 went to principal and $98 went to interest. You know, this doesn't make sense to me.
No.
I just wasted, in my mind, it was a waste, even though I did get the college education, I wasted $98.
Yeah.
So at that point, I just started, all right, I'm going to pour every excess dollar I've got into getting rid of these student loans because I hate losing money.
Mm.
And I paid them off in a couple and a half years.
Nice. That took
care, yeah, it took care of that debt, but really, that was just one component of it. I still didn't understand the credit cards. During that time, that's when I went out and bought a new vehicle, so I didn't understand the car loans or the financing and any of that stuff. And then from there, I got a really a more expensive car, and on top of that, a really huge mortgage. So going from one issue and resolving it to more issues, just not having an understanding of those things. And about at the time I bought my house, when I had an $800 a month car payment because I had a really nice car, and I had a huge mortgage and an empty bank account, and I signed up for some of those no furniture plans, you know.
Yes.
Get all the furniture, pay for it later, figure it out as you go along. And then I'm looking at my bank account, and I'm like, I don't have any money. I don't know where the mortgage money is going to come from next month. I better figure something out.
Yeah.
And at that point, I started learning more about personal finance, listening to guys on the radio like Clark Howard. He's a big inspiration in my life. So I learned a lot from him.
Interesting. Okay, so you have this. What was the total amount of debt, out of curiosity?
Oh, let's see. The car loan was probably $20,000 or $30,000. Then there was the furniture, probably another $5,000, and then my mortgage. At the time, this was prior to the mortgage or the housing crisis.
Oh, yeah.
So back in the day, you could get a mortgage with no real credit history or anything like that. So my mortgage was, I think I had a 5% down payment. It was about $205,000
for the mortgage. So pretty standard. Yeah. And then did you have the kids were after all that getting out of debt process?
Yeah,
right?
that was all in my single years.
Gotcha. That's kind of a good way to start your future, though. Your future family. I think that's so smart.
Yeah, get the stupid stuff out of the way.
Your wife probably appreciates that, too.
Yeah.
I love it. So talk to me a little bit about what were some of the big sacrifices that you made to get out of debt? Because that's no easy feat. You made some incredible progress. But what did you have to cut out to get to that level?
The first major decision I made was I sold my expensive car.
Ooh.
I wasn't sleeping well at night because I've got all these payments and I've got this mortgage. I'm a single guy. I don't have any emergency fund. I haven't learned about what that is yet.
Yeah.
So there's like no 3 to 6 month cushion anywhere. It's just me living by myself. If I lose my job, you know, things are going to explode. Mm-hmm. So I decided, all right, I got to unload this car. I took a massive loss on it. But what I did with the money is I paid $6,500 for this used beat up truck. Mm-hmm. And I drove that around for a number of years. I took the rest of the money and I put it in the stock market, proceeded to lose it all because I thought I was an awesome investor investing in individual stocks, which you should not do. And I teach people to not do that now. Just go out picking the next hot stocks.
Yeah.
So I lost pretty much all that money. And again, starting from... But at that point, my only debt was the home because I had the car paid for, and I slowly built up my emergency fund after I learned about, you know, what those are.
Mm.
So that was really a turning point in my life where I started to accumulate wealth rather than just blow money.
Imagine that, right? I mean, yeah. Novel concept. But I'm curious about this. You sold your car, your awesome, amazing, beautiful car that you were probably truly in love with. But you sold it, and so many people will not do that, let alone take a loss on it and then drive a car that's not quite as nice. Where was your mind at that time? You said you weren't sleeping so great at night because of it, but how did you make that mindset shift? Because that's huge.
It is, and a lot of people really struggle with that. And I think I don't have an identification with the vehicle that I drive. So I've learned over the years, I've been driving my car now since I have a 2007 Honda Fit. It's got 100,000 miles on it. I love it. It fits me just fine. That's why they call it the fit.
No pun intended.
Yeah. So at the time, I was like, well, I really felt like I want to be able to sleep at night. I don't want to have to worry. I'm a single guy. You know, let's just get rid of this car and let's simplify life. And I'm learning all these good financial topics from people that I'm listening to on the radio. Mm-hmm. So let's make this change. I'm going to make that sacrifice because, you know, in the long run, it's going to work out better for me.
No, that makes perfect
sense. And it absolutely did. I mean, that was probably the single most important financial decision I made in my life when I started learning about personal finance. First step was unload the car. And ever since then, we've had no car loans. After that, I got married. We've had no car loans. And it's been, I'd say, revolutionary to my finances.
Yeah.
Just seeing money grow and not having a car payment every month. And for somebody who has not experienced that, they really, you don't get it until you actually do it. And then you start seeing the money in your bank account every month. It's like, oh, there's another $300 or $400 that I used to spend every month. And it's like there. And at the end of the year, wow, we've got $5,000, $6,000, $7,000, $8,000, depending on how much your car payment is. So until you do that and make that step and have that leap of faith, you cannot really experience the life-changing scenario that happens.
You're so right. And one of the things I like to tell people too is, of course, I'm joking, but I always say, you know, if I'm wrong and if you truly miss that car, I mean, go get it again. No big deal, right? I mean, we can always go back to that. And that's one of the things that I think when you're getting out of debt is that pain that you feel is so temporary, right? I mean, it's short-term sacrifice, but that long-term result is so important. So for you, what was that big long-term motivator? What was your vision, your thing where you're like, I'm going to get to this point in my life? What was that for you?
I think my biggest motivator was just fear.
Yeah.
Fear of being broke, you know, fear of having to sell my home or who knows what. Because some people have to downsize, they have to get rid of their car, they have to go back and live with mom and dad or you know, take a lower paying job if they lose their position and they don't have that freedom. Nowadays, I have different kinds of fears because I have kids. So it's all right. I want my kids to have a decent life. I want them to be able to eat and have clothes on their back. So you have different fears as you progress through life. But at that point in my time was, you know, I like this house. I don't want to have to go through foreclosure or anything like that, move back home or move into a tiny apartment or anything like that. Get accustomed to a particular level of lifestyle, whatever happens that be for each individual. And I like my lifestyle the way it was, and I didn't want to have it regress back to the post-college days living in an apartment.
Yeah, ramen noodles, man. That makes so much sense. What did you study in college?
I studied computer science.
Oh, awesome. That's totally different than personal finance.
Yes.
I love it. Okay, so now you're married. You have two little kids. How are you teaching your two-year-old twins? Are you teaching them personal finance lessons now? And if so, what are you teaching them?
They have the money hippo.
That's the best.
It's a little hippo, and they love the toy. They got these giant plastic coins, what they put in, and it makes a little ringing noise. They love that toy. So
that is so cute.
It's a little early for them. They're learning to share with each other, and just sharing is a big deal with them right now.
I think that's so perfect. The money hippo, that's such a good way to get them at least thinking about it and get them started on that because, I mean, yeah, they're two. Of course, they're not going to learn compound interest at 2 years old, but the fact that they're starting to have that conversation is so important because, I mean, I don't know about you, but I didn't learn that stuff until I was well done with college and on my own and trying to figure it all out.
Right.
So let's talk about that too. Did you have any type of, like, were your parents really good with money or did they just kind of struggle in that area? And what were some of the good things they taught you or bad things they taught you, I guess, in some cases?
Yeah, my parents they're very, I'd say, unique individuals throughout what they've accomplished in life. We grew up in a middle-class family out in the country. Nobody in our area really had any wealth except for this one guy who was an attorney. So
of course.
You know, he made the lawyer type of hourly fees, but everybody else was kind of like in the same playing field. And my wife's family, they were kind of the same way, just general middle class growing up in a small town. The one lesson I learned from my parents was just to save. They always pounded into my head. I've been working since 10 years old, so I've always had a good work ethic. Started with a paper route, worked at gas stations, restaurants, every summer through college, mowing lawns, just all throughout my whole life. But they always told me, you know, save half what you earn or save a percentage of what you earn. Don't spend all your money. And sometimes they would catch me like making little ideas and goals. I've written down things of stuff that I wanted to buy. Stupid stuff like a teenager would want, like I wanted the new car or I want this awesome stereo. And they're like, you know, what is this?
Yeah, exactly.
So they taught me to save money. But the interesting thing about my parents is they rented homes or rented apartments their entire life. They never owned a home. They never had any debt. And they never had any credit cards either. Only until recently, probably in the past, I'd say 10 or 15 years, did my mom get a credit card just to have one and learn it.
Interesting. And
so always paid cash for cars, always bought used cars. We always rented. We never took extravagant vacations. We rarely went on vacations other than to see family. So I lived a very simple and modest lifestyle. Never invested. My dad worked for the town, so he got a pension. Okay. And my mom, well, I have three brothers and a sister, so she took care of the family for the most part. She worked in a coffee shop part-time later in life when my older brothers and sisters moved out of the house. So didn't have a ton of money, not a lot of investments. We just had a dad's pension and Social Security. So very, very simple life.
Yeah. When you were in high school, did your high school teach you anything about personal finance?
Oh, absolutely not.
No. Isn't that such a bummer?
It is, yes. It's necessary, but I don't know. I guess we're teaching Common Core math instead these days.
Instead of like how to actually budget.
Yeah.
But they teach you how to balance a checkbook, you know.
Right.
That always kills me. That one's always so funny to me. I'm like, who's balanced a checkbook in the past 5 years? I mean, yeah. I don't know. I haven't at least. But so what did that, now that you're totally out of debt, mortgage too, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, interesting story behind that. I got married. I had my home. My wife had a townhouse. So after we got married, I moved in with her in her smaller home, sold my home. And from there, we made a decision that she was going to go to school full time and get her MBA.
Awesome.
So she quit her job. And part of our criteria for marriage was she's from Texas. I had to bring her back home to Texas.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Yes, we lived in Atlanta at the time. That's where we met. So that was one of her requirements of getting married. She finished her MBA. Prior to finishing that, we put her townhouse on the market, and then we downsized again into a rental home. So we went from, I had a 2,200 square foot house, moved into a 1,200 square foot townhouse, which was hers. Then we moved into a 1,000 square foot rental home, which was built in the 1950s. Which came with extra guests like squirrels in the attic.
Seriously?
Yes. From there, we moved to Texas, and she had her shiny new MBA. She had tons of references. She got a degree in commercial real estate development. She had interns. She had all kinds of interviews, and then the real estate market just tanked. This was in 2007. So she couldn't find a job. We had planned on staying with her parents in Texas for 3 weeks. After we arrived there, after she was doing all of her job interviews. And we ended up staying with them for a year because she couldn't find work. So during that time, we had started a little business, side business for her with the intent of she wanted a new vehicle. And we decided, okay, you want a new vehicle. And she had been listening to Dave Ramsey on the radio. And one of his things for is buy new vehicles in cash. Don't take out a car loan. And at that point, we were committed to keeping a debt-free lifestyle, not taking out a bunch of loans or excess debt. So she said, what can I do to build or buy a new car, but I don't want to take out a loan? So she came up with a business idea for her that was very successful. So we ended up saving money for her vehicle. But the entire time when we were in Texas that first year, we lived with our in-laws. Mm-hmm. So again, going from our 1,000 square foot rental home down to a, I don't know what it was, 300 square foot room in the in-laws' house. But during that time, we just banked money because we didn't have any expenses. We paid them a little bit of money each month for rent. Mm-hmm. With the town we lived in, there was no place to go out and eat that was any good. So, you know, the entertainment budget was zero. That's no nice. Utilities. For that entire year, we just saved up pretty much everything that we earned. And we were able to put 50% down on the house that we looked at. And the plan was, yeah. So we signed a contract on a house. It took them 9 months to build. And during that entire time, we just saved money with the mindset of, all right, if things don't work out, we only lose our deposit on the house because it's a new construction. So no big deal. We were willing to take that risk, and we'll just continue to save and save. And by the time we rolled around, we had 50% down. And we had enough in investments and other money later on that 6 months later, we decided, all right, you know, we can keep investing or we can just pay off the rest of the house and not have a mortgage. So we made a financial decision. We want to sleep good at night. We know we could probably make more money in the stock market compared to the interest rates on the mortgage. but we'll sleep better. We won't have a mortgage. This is going to be awesome. We're just going to write a check and be done with it. That's what we did. And that was in 2009.
Oh my gosh. I can only imagine how good that felt too. That's such a freeing experience.
It was. So we celebrated. It was a great time. Haven't had a mortgage since then or any loans. And it's just been amazing because we don't have that worry. We're going to get kicked out of our house, or are we going to make the mortgage, or is something bad going to happen? Is the business going to tank? Right. We always have that in the back of our mind. You know, what if this happens? And so, you know, we don't have those worries anymore. It's so freeing to be in that position.
Yeah, really, you're exactly right. I'm not mortgage free yet, but that's my next big goal. But you're exactly right. It's like, especially as an entrepreneur and trying to do your own thing too, even though you only have a mortgage, that's still in the back of your mind. It's still there. And I think that's one of the cool things about being debt free is that you can actually legitimately go do whatever the heck you want. If you want to start a business, great. You want to stay home with the kids? Awesome. And it's such a different experience that not a lot of people can get. But I'm curious, what is your thoughts? How would you coach somebody, or how would you help somebody that comes to you and says, Scott, I really want to be debt free, but I have $100,000 in debt. What would you suggest? Like, how do you show them there's a light at the end of the tunnel? What advice would you give?
Sure. The first thing I would tell anybody that has debt is the same thing we did early on in our marriage, is you've got to sit down and figure out what your goals are. Mm. Because you can't say, well, we're gonna sit down tonight, honey, or sit down by myself and just write out a budget. Because a budget is useless. Everybody hates doing budgeting. No matter what people say, budgeting is not fun. It's just something you do to get to a goal that you want to achieve. Now, the goal is fun. When we first got married, we sat down with a financial planner or financial advisor to help us. He was also a marriage coach as well, just to get us on the same page and say, you know, what are our long-term goals? What are our one-year, five-year, 10-year goals? And if anybody is looking to get out of debt, you've got to have something to shoot for. Because if you're not shooting for something, you're shooting for nothing. And you can get nothing every time.
So true.
And those goals are going to be different for every person. If it is, you've got a $100,000 debt, you know, look at your income. What are you making? What can you set aside each month? And just pick a date that you think you can hit and then move it up some. I mean, get aggressive with it. Don't pick a date 10 years out in the future.
Yeah.
The farther out your date, if you pick a 10-year date, you'll hit the 10-year date. If you pick a 7-year date, you'll hit that 7-year date. If you pick a 5-year date, you're going to hit that 5-year date. Mm-hmm. So you might as well pick one close as possibly can and then just shoot for it. And if you don't make it, you adjust as you go along.
That's great advice, too. I think you're exactly right. You have to dream big when it comes to getting out of debt. So many people are, and I guess, I mean, I don't want to say it's right or wrong, but so many people just really aim for, I'm going to be on the standard 10-year student loan repayment, and eventually I'll get out of debt. But until then, they don't really factor in all that level of stress and that lost sleep and the opportunities you can't take and the things you can't say yes to because you do have debt. And so it's always so frustrating to me to see that, because when you're out of debt, you get it. Like, you really understand that you can say yes more than no. And it's kind of a bummer.
Right. And then when you have those goals to shoot for, that's when you can go back and work on the budget, get all your money in order. And every decision you make each day, each purchase, when you're looking at something online, when you're going out to eat, when you're walking by the Starbucks, it's always in the back of your mind, yeah, I can go to the Starbucks, but then, you know, I'm not going to make this goal that I've set. Or you think of the bigger stuff too. If I go out and I get this new car and finance it, well, then I'm really going to be in debt much longer, and that's not what I want to do. So it's going to impact the small decisions. It's going to impact the big decisions. It's going to impact the short-term decisions. It's going to impact the long-term decisions. Really, everything around you gets impacted by those goals. Another thing I tell people is you got to keep your goals in front of you. Mm. Stick them up on the bathroom mirror. Back when I wanted that fancy car that I should have never got, I had a picture of it up on my bathroom mirror. And actually, I told my college professor way back before I even graduated, said, I want this car by age whatever it was. And that's the car I ended up getting. So you can have these goals, but you get to see them, keep them at the front of your mind, review them each day. That really keeps you on track. And then also surround yourself with people that will keep you accountable as well.
Mm. Talk to me a little bit about the accountability stuff. How did you go about finding people that supported your really seriously crazy kind of lifestyle of being totally debt-free? How did you find those people?
Our financial planner had a big play in that prior to, or just after we got married. when I was single, it was more of listening to the guys on the radio every day. I mean, I would go into work, plug in the headphones all day long as a computer programmer. I'm always sitting on the computer.
Yeah.
So I had that opportunity to listen to them. My brother, who is also debt-free, he's older than I am, he had a lot of commuting in his job. So he would listen to the same guys on the radio day after day when he's going to between client meetings. Hmm. So it's reinforcing your mind each day with maybe people that you'd never meet, just guys that you hear on the radio. Nowadays, it's a little bit different because you can hop on a Facebook group with these like-minded people, and you can get input from them, and they will encourage you no matter what your situation is. If you're $50,000 in debt and you just managed to pay off your first credit card ever, I mean, people are going to celebrate with you, and that's awesome. So I'm in some of those groups, and I love encouraging people and seeing those stories. Like, I just paid off my first credit card for $300, and that's the first time I've ever been able to do that. So, yeah, that's awesome.
It is cool. I think you're right. That community is so important and so valuable, and I think nowadays, like you mentioned, you get it on Facebook. Like, there's no excuse anymore for saying I can't find people that support my goals. They are everywhere.
Yeah, absolutely. And then Jim Rohn, I think, his famous quote, you are the average of the five people that you spend the most time with. I mean, that gets tossed around a lot in the world of quotes and inspiration, but it's a true statement. Mm. If you're hanging around with people who exercise all the time, you're more likely to exercise. If you hang around with people who make a focus of staying out of debt and being smart with the money, and they talk about money and investing, that's going to rub off on you, and you're going to learn about that stuff and make smarter choices. And the inverse is true, too. If you're hanging out people who are partying till 2 a.m. every night, I have friends like that, then you're more likely to go out and party and blow all your money every night. So you can do both, but you just need to find the right balance based on the goals that you're trying to achieve.
I love that. Is there like a certain process you go through for goal setting? Are you like long-term, short-term? Do you have any certain philosophy on that?
I do long-term goals, 1 year, 5 year, 10 years, and then I'll break those down into how I'm actually going to accomplish those. Obviously, something 10 years out, it's a little more harder to break them down into smaller steps, but I use certain software for my work where I can break down what I'm going to work on tomorrow, what I'm going to work on this week, what I want to accomplish in the next 90 days. You can do that if you're budgeting as well, if you're trying to learn how to invest. Anything that you could, any goal that you want to accomplish, you can break down into smaller steps. And it's super important to do that too, because otherwise you just have this thing. It's really hard to reach a goal that's 12 months away without a plan to get there.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people use weight loss as a comparable subject to financial planning, because if you say, I want to lose 100 pounds in the next year, well, that's nothing. there's no power, there's no strength behind that. But if you say, I want to lose a pound this week, and here's how I'm going to do it, I'm going to track my calories every day, I'm going to go to the gym 4 times, and then next week I'm going to lose another pound, and then by the end of the year I want to have that 100 pounds off. I mean, that's tangible. You can grasp that, and you can see your progress each day throughout the week. It makes it much more easier to accomplish.
Mm-hmm. I think you're spot on. It's breaking those goals down into very small actionable steps that you can do every single day sometimes, and then you wake up, you know, 10 years later and you're that overnight success.
Right. And then if for somebody who's in debt, the goal can be really modest. Like, all right, today I'm going to bring my lunch to work.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to spend the $10 at Subway. I love Subway, but I don't go there every day.
Yeah. No, I totally agree. It's finding those little tiny things. I'm curious, what is your thought on, I mean, everyone's so different, I know, but for people that are going out to coffee, say Monday through Friday, it sounds like you're pretty hardcore with the get out of debt stuff too, as am I. I like to just dive in and just get it done and not think about it later. But a lot of people don't really seem to do well with that. So do you suggest they like slowly cut back on coffee, or just say, forget about it and I'm all in?
I think when people sit down and do the budget for the first time and they write down, put all the receipts in the different piles and the different categories, whatever makes sense to them, and they start to see where their money is going, then you can make much more conscious decisions on what you're spending on based on, again, your long-term goals. That's what you're going to sit on. So if you're spending $1,000 a month on eating out, which is not outrageous. Well, it is outrageous, but yeah. It's kind of typical for some families. And it's because you're eating lunch out for work, you're grabbing the Starbucks or the bagel on the way to work, you're grabbing something on the way home because you're tired and miserable, had a bad day at work. When you see all that money laid out for the 30 days that you've actually tracked it, then it's like, oh, wow, we really are spending a ton of money. Maybe we'll just let's just try for the next 30 days. I'm going to bring my lunch to work for 4 days. and not eat out for 5 days. And just make small changes like that, and those changes will become habits over time. And it's easier to digest than just whacking everything and go whole hog for some people, which that does work for some people as well. Some people do that with dieting, say, all right, I'm cutting off the desserts. Or like me, I'm cutting off the Diet Coke.
I know. I'm with you on the Diet Coke and coffee. I have to watch my creamer. Yeah. It's a bummer. So, Scott, we're going to start wrapping up, but I'm just curious, where do people go to learn more about you? Is there any social media accounts you like? Is there a website? I mean, where do they go to learn more?
Sure. My website is scottallenturner.com, A-L-A-N. And then I can be found on Twitter at Scott Allen Turner as well.
Perfect. Scott, thank you so much for spending some time with me and sharing your story. I know it's totally inspirational, and I'm very, very confident it will help people get to that next level, whatever that means for them. So thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Whitney. It's been a pleasure.
Yeah. I hope you enjoy your day and have fun with those two cute little ones.
Thanks.
All right. We'll see you later. Have a good one.
Okay. Bye.
Okay, so what did you guys think? I love Scott's story. I think it's so amazing how he went from age 22 with a really massive car payment to just 13 years later being a self-made millionaire. This guy really does know what he's talking about. And it's incredible, especially as you listen through his story of how he got to that process. It's fascinating to see his mindset and his philosophies behind personal finance. So I really thought that was pretty cool. One thing that Scott said that really stood out to me was, I don't have an identification with a car. That's not part of who he is. And I think that's such an important part, because car payments can really kill your financial future. They really can. And it's something that we think we all have to have, but yet we can get away with driving a beater, and it does the job. It gets you from point A to point B. Yet we're so embarrassed or fearful of driving a crappy beater car. And so I really thought that was pretty cool that he was saying not having a car payment was the single greatest thing he did for his financial life. Super inspirational. This is definitely an interview I'm going to be listening to over and over again to see if I can glean a little bit more out of his story and his information. And I just find that stuff really inspiring. So that's what stood out to me. And I would love to see and hear what stood out to you. So tag me in social media and let me know, what was your key takeaway from this interview? As always, thank you so much for listening in. If you have found some value out of this podcast or this episode, please consider leaving a review and sharing it with your friends, because we all know that sharing is the way to get attention and help people with their own financial life. It's a pretty big deal. Thanks so much for joining in, guys. I will see you next Wednesday.